Good morning, friends. I am Professor J. Patil. I was earlier the head of the Department of Economics, Shivaji University, Kolhapur. I also worked as Director, Board of College and University Development in the same university for 2.5 years. I have been associated with almost all universities in Maharashtra in my capacity as member of different academic bodies. I was also appointed by the government of Maharashtra as member state planning board for 2.5 years. I have been elected president of Marathi Arthashastra Parishad, president of Shivaji University Economics Association, vice president of Indian Society for Agricultural Economics. At present, I am associated with Shivaji University as member advisory board for a very important chair created by Government of Maharashtra, Mahavir Adhyasan. I am also associated with, was associated with Yashwantrao Chavan Maharashtra Open University as member of the Academic Council for a full term, and then as member of the Planning Committee also for a full term. I have been writing on economics and of course I have been delivering lectures on economics at various academic as well as non-academic gatherings. Today, I am going to talk to you about interrelationship between business economics and economic policy. Naturally, to discuss on this issue, it is necessary to begin with what we really mean by the term economics. Economics, to begin with, as defined by Adam Smith, is the science of wealth. Subsequently, a great British economist, Lord Lionel Robbins, defined economics as science of choice, followed by some other important definitions. But the definition given by Marshall is one of the most important and socially significant definitions. According to Alfred Marshall, again a British economist, economics studies that side of human nature which is involved in satisfaction of human wants, for which his behavior has to effect a kind of balance between scarce means, resources, which have alternative uses, and of course multiple wants, and which go on increasing, which go on repeating, which go on becoming more and more acute as the time goes ahead, as the incomes of the people change and tastes of the people change. But basically, if we stick to Alfred Marshall, economics is, in a sense, the science of human behavior related to satisfaction of human wants. At a stage where Thomas Malthus, again a British economist, discussed population problem in his essay on population, after reading different paragraphs of that particular essay, one philosopher from England, Thomas Carlyle, he described economics also as a dismal science. It is not a dismal science, in fact, it is one of the most important human sciences as I understand it. Finally, coming to another very important observation regarding the importance and nature of economics, I feel we must go to a Nobel Prize winner economist, American, Professor Samuelson, Paul Samuelson. In his opinion, economics is the queen of social sciences. In his opinion, economics is the great conversation of the age. Yesterday, today and tomorrow. Of course, in a continuous fashion, economic issues dominate and will dominate the social aspects of any society, any civilization. Any kingdom, any democracy, any dictatorial system, economics just cannot be neglected. So, in a very broad and comprehensive manner, we can define economics basic economics as science of material living with maximization of utility, where utility is satisfaction of human beings, satisfaction of groups of human beings, satisfaction of the society. In fact, here again, one reference has to be made to a great philosopher, Bentham. He wrote about utility analysis. His approach is itself known as utilitarianism. According to him, anything that we do as an individual, as a group, as a nation, must aim at the greatest happiness of the greatest number of people. That is what economics is supposed to deal with, basically. This is the basic nature of economics. Now, coming to this rather later introduction or emergence of a science which is called as business economics, we have to look at the definitions in a different perspective. Basically, business economics is application of economic principles to business decisions. In fact, business, broadly understood, is anything related with industry, commerce, trade, banking, government, everything. Even cultivation of a piece of land, management of an irrigation scheme, a credit society, all these are different versions of business activity. And when we deal with business economics, we deal with what we call as application of different fundamental principles of economic theory, economic science, to the solutions of the confronting problems, answering raised questions, and developing policy options. When we talk about application of economic principles to behavior, human behavior, what do we deal with? There are basically three important human actions: production, distribution, and consumption. Of course, in a broad philosophical perspective, consumption is the end objective of all economic activity. Why do we produce? Why do we distribute? Because we want to consume things. We want to use things, exhaust them, whether it is food, whether it is clothing, whether it is education, whether it is medicine, whether it is a legal piece of advice, whether it is a doctor's advice, whether it is an entertainment program. Everything that is done in the process of production aims at ultimate consumption, aims at ultimate satisfaction of one or two or many human wants or requirements. So basically, there are three economic activities, sectors of three economic activities: production, distribution, consumption. Distribution involves trade and commerce, collecting goods produced, storing them, keeping investment stocks, distributing them through road transport, railway transport, shipping, river transport to the houses of the consumers, selling them effectively, generating profit. All these activities, they come under what can be described as broadly business aspect of human life. Now, we come to the next issue that we must discuss in a clear, more elaborate fashion. Even professions like teaching, law, medicine, accountancy, costing, and all activities under entertainment sector, they can be described as services. And services in economic terminology are broadly called as professions. Now, if application of economic principles to business problems is the way how we understand business economics, then naturally, what we must understand, what the basic questions in business economics are. In fact, as I remember Samuelson, these questions are not restricted only to business economics. They are broadly questions of life, questions of basic economics also, not only business economics, basic economics also. In his globally circulated a kind of a miracle type of a textbook, Professor Samuelson describes basic questions of economics, which constitute the basic questions of business economics also. The first question is, what to produce? A society, a consuming society, requires a multiple goods and a multiple services. I require food, I require clothing, I require medicines, I require books, I require notebooks, I require pencils, I require transport vehicles, I require petrol, I require diesel. So many things are there. The number of such requirements, in fact, friends, is immeasurable, to be frank. So, an economic decision of greatest importance for any businessman is what to produce. Now, naturally, the next question that is related to this is, when you raise this question, what to produce, how do you answer it? And the answer depends on what the people require. So, the decision what to produce is basically related to what the people want. If a business organization produces something which the society doesn't want, which the people do not require, then that production will be wasteful, it will not succeed, it cannot aim for maximization of profits, and sooner or later that production activity will have to be closed down. So, the answer to this question, what to produce, in a broad sense, is a business unit, a businessman will produce something which is required by the society in enough number of units. Number two, that is a kind of a technical question. How to produce? Suppose you decide to produce a particular commodity, a cellular phone, a mobile unit. Because most of the people in an increasing number now want a mobile set. So their demand exists. People are willing to buy such sales by paying a certain price. So demand exists. People want it. And you decide to produce this. How do you produce it? Production involves choice of technology. Would you produce that by using sheer, mere human labor, human hand, human skill, and nothing more than that? Yes, there are certain things which are produced by mere human labor. But there are goods which will be produced by a highly automated mechanical engineering method of production. So choice of technology, choice of equipment, choice of machinery, all these things, choice of power, fuel, all these things together will constitute your decisions regarding how to produce. And with fast changing technology, with fast changing science, with fast changing innovations, and fast changing demands of the people, tastes of the people, I want a mobile, but a mobile with better looks, a mobile with better battery, a mobile with better color, a mobile, not only a mobile, but it should be a kind of a tablet, a certain thing known as iPhone, a laptop, all put together, smartphone, all these things are there. So people go on changing their demands. And with the changing demands, you have to depend more and more on technology of production. And this involves second, number two, important economic question, that is how to produce. Number three is, of course, a very practical consideration, how much to produce, quantity of production. And again, quantity of production, we can very easily understand, depends on the number of people who are going to buy it, and desire to buy something, and ability to buy something. They are two different things. If I say that all 121 crores of this in country, they want to buy, they desire to buy, but if they don't possess that purchasing capacity, that desire has no economic meaning. So, ability of individuals to buy a certain thing at a price, that is important. That really reflects want. Want is understood in this fashion. Want is not desire. Just expecting, yes, I should have this. That carries no meaning. What carries meaning is, I have money in my pocket, I can go to a shop, make a selection, pay the price and collect the view. If this is how it is going to happen, that demand is real demand, effective demand, technically known as effective demand. So, how many people require how many units of that particular commodity will answer the question, how much to produce. But here there is one more important limitation. We earlier discussed how to produce, that is the choice of technology. There are machines which produce things. And the capacity of a machine to produce things per unit of time is limited. A machine will produce in a year 1,000 units of a product, not more than that. So that becomes automatic limit on your production capacity, the number of units to be produced. So how much to produce will be decided on the one hand by choice of technology you effectively took, and on the other hand, the number of people buying that particular commodity over a period of time. So that requires a still more detailed application of mind. The next question is, for whom to produce? Now this is a kind of a social question, not only an economic question. It is a kind of a social question. Social question, just because of this particular consideration, there will be people who want only luxury items, for which they will be willing to pay any price. But their number will be very small, not more than 5%, 10% of the total population, who are super rich, affluent, and who can spend on anything to any extent, and what is that matters with them is a feeling of pride, not the feeling of consumption, the feeling of satisfaction. Yes, I possess. Why do people buy big cars like Audi, like Mercedes, like Ferrari, Lamborghini, a car costing 3 crores or 4 crores a unit, something beyond our capacity of imagination. But there are buyers, and if there are buyers who can buy such a commodity, then there will have to be producers who can produce such a commodity. So, if there are buyers of a commodity which is highly prohibitively priced, but that is required by a certain section of the society, some producer will be there who will produce that commodity. So, for whom to produce is, as I said again and again, a social question. Normally, a structure of a society is sufficiently large, average section of the population, which includes below poverty line, above poverty line, semi-medium income, medium income, middle income, but all these are average citizens. Then there will be a higher income group, not very rich income group, but higher income group. And finally there will be a small 5%, 10%, very rich, affluent class. Now the demand of the society is determined by this composition of the society, economic composition. We can call it as economic composition. So, if as a manufacturer I have to take a decision how many units of cars I produce, my answer will not be immediately forthcoming. It will depend upon what kind of car I am producing. If I am producing Maruti 800, lakhs of buyers will be there. If I produce only Audi, only buyers numbered in thousands only, in a country like India, this number will be sharper. Now, how do I decide this? Whether to produce, manufacture a Maruti 800 or a Mercedes or an Audi or a Ferrari will be taken on the basis of what kind of profits I am going to make, number one. Do I have that kind of technology, number two. Do I have that kind of manpower available at reasonable price level, number three. All these questions are put together and then the answer is given. Yes, I produce this car. So, in taking a decision for whom to produce, you have to take into consideration technology, taste, preferences, social composition of the population, classified by economic criteria. So many things are there. Then, the final most important business decision is how to price the commodity. How do I fix the price of a thing, of this bottle or of this mobile set? What is that guides me in fixing this price? Normally this is discussed in economic theory under price theory. In business economics it is discussed under pricing policy. In business economics, this is discussed under pricing policy. And in a capitalist society, in a society where private property exists, in a society where consumption is free, where choices are not restricted by government control, and where people get rewards according to their work, how much they work will decide their income. And all these factors together will constitute how much they are willing to pay for a particular product. So broadly and philosophically, the price of a commodity product will be determined on the one hand by the ability of the buyers to pay for that unit. That will be the highest limit. Now there are people who are willing to pay 2-3 crores for a car. So that is their highest capacity. But does it mean that I should fix the price exactly and only on the basis of ability of the people to pay? No. There is a minimum level. This is the maximum level. You can price a good to the maximum level beyond which people will not buy it. But there is a lower limit. What can be described as a bottom level, below which you cannot price that product. And this bottom level pricing decision is based on what can be technically called as cost of production considerations. For producing a commodity, every producer, manufacturer, businessman requires use of labor, use of land, use of capital, use of management, all factors of production. When they are put together, they lead to a production of a unit. Now, do we get free factors of production? No. All factors of production, just because they are limited in number and they have to leave themselves, they require a price to be paid for them. So, I will have to pay some wages to the workers. I will have to pay some rent for the land used. I will have to pay some interest for the capital used, and finally I must charge for the management, which is considered as profit. All these things put together determine the cost. If you fix the price of a commodity below this cost, you will enter into loss area. And no business activity, no economic activity continues for a long time if it incurs losses continuously, and incurring losses is the result of pricing below cost of production. So, your pricing will have to be equal to costing or more than costing. Your costing will have to be less than what the people are willing to pay, or at the most equal to what the people are willing to pay. These are two limits within which the price of a commodity will be fixed. This particular explanation tells us about the range. How exactly is the price fixed? And that is determined by the producer, the businessman, by considering how much profits he wants to make. One who is willing to sell a large number of units of a commodity at per unit profits of very small amount and still make total large profits will produce a large number of units and price the units at a lower level. Not below cost level, but lower level. Somebody who wants to make large profits by selling a small number of units, he will push up the price almost to the ability of the consumer, the buyer. And that these two considerations will determine how the price is fixed in a philosophical and theoretical manner. But that is not enough. For a business decision, a businessman, a professional will have to have recorded costing figures, addition, then addition of profit margins, calculations, and this is basically the responsibility of the cost accountant. How much do I require to produce a given unit in a given time span with a given technology, plant and machinery in a year? But these are various considerations which are required to be taken into consideration by anybody, any professional businessman, when he takes a decision regarding pricing of a product. In this basic consideration, in this, we have to again consider in greater details what are the basic considerations of a business decision-taking unit. And there are many. In fact, it is somewhat said that there are multiplicity of considerations. Number one consideration is unlimited number of demands, wants, needs, requirements of society. You can have great choice regarding what to produce because there are people requiring different things at different times in different quantities. So, diversity, multiplicity, novelty and continuous dynamic nature of human wants is one basic consideration in this respect. Number two consideration is scarcity of means. Friends, we should always remember that it is only because of scarcity of means coupled with alternative application of means that economic problem emerges. What is basically economic problem? Economic problem is striking a balance between number of demands and very scarce resources. Striking a balance between means and ends. Ends are multiple, never ending, continuously emerging, and means are always very scarce, and the same unit of a particular means can be used for different purposes at the same time. Now this makes the problem of choice very important, and every businessman makes a meaningful choice only when he realizes this, that his resources are limited and that he has to make a sensible, wise, calculated decision. Alternative use of resources. Think about a piece of land. You can use a piece of land, say 5 acres or 2 acres or 10, whatever the size, for cultivation of jowar. The same piece of land can be used for cultivation of groundnut. The same piece can be used for the cultivation of tobacco. The same piece can be used for the cultivation of cotton. The same piece can be used for cultivation of different fruits. So, this is one example. This example amply illustrates the fact that a piece of factor of production can be used for a number of alternative purposes. And this fact makes the choice aspect of this particular discussion very important. We have to always make a choice. If your resources were unlimited, if your income is unlimited, if you have unlimited time at your disposal, then there will be no choice problem and naturally there will be no economic problem. If there is unlimited supply of food available, there will be no population problem and there will be no problem of food inflation, there will be no problem of prices of food. Food will be easily available at no price. So, choice problem in a way pervades the entire economic discussion. Let us move to the next important consideration, utility. This is a very important concept in economics, maybe in philosophy also. What is utility? Utility is the ability of a particular good or service to satisfy a certain human want. Anything which has no utility has no price, has no value. More particularly, anything which is scarce and has utility has price. And in fact, as we know very clearly, almost all things in the human society are limited in number, limited in quantity, limited in supply. They are useful, and because they are useful and because they are scarce, they acquire price. In regard to utility, economic science, not only in regard to utility, in regard to business decisions, in economic science, there are a number of important basic economic truths, let us call them economic truths, which cannot be violated and which will always regulate, which will always control economic behavior of any person and more particularly the economic decision making of a businessman. There are four considerations. Number one, four, five considerations in fact. Number one is diminishing marginal utility, the law of diminishing marginal utility. This is, I would say, one of the fundamental principles of economics. Number two is diminishing marginal returns in the field of production. Number three is return to scale, again in the field of production. Number four is relationship between wealth and welfare. And number five is the basic human attribute, which is rationality. We will discuss these step by step. Number one is the law of diminishing marginal utility. This simply explains, with a given set of conditions existing, tastes and preferences and my income and all that, if these factors are given, and if I start consuming a particular commodity, the first commodity unit, the first unit of the commodity will give me a certain level of satisfaction. Let us call it 100 utility. When I use the second unit of that commodity, the commodity in terms of size, weight, volume, etc., it will be the same. But the satisfaction that I received from the first unit of the commodity is greater than the satisfaction of the second unit of the commodity. Now this change, this fall in satisfaction, in utility, goes on happening more and more as I consume more and more, as I acquire more and more, as I possess more and more. Larger the number of units consumed, smaller will be the addition to the total satisfaction. That is, smaller will be the addition to the total utility. And this addition to the total utility by consuming a particular unit at a stage is technically described as marginal utility. Marginal utility goes on decreasing as I consume more and more units of a particular commodity. This is, friends, remember well, one of the most pervading, widespread, fundamental rules, laws, theories of economics. Number two is, of course, utility consideration is more dominant in the field of consumption. How much I consume, how much I use, how much I enjoy, and how much utility I get. So, utility is related to consumption. What about production? Are we in a position to produce unlimited things with a given technology, with the given composition of resources? And the answer is no. We cannot produce unlimited quantity of production of a particular commodity by using given resources. Every production activity, without any exception, is subject to what in economics is technically known as law of diminishing marginal returns. Suppose we are producing a certain commodity with given technology. What will be the main inputs? Labor and capital. With given labor and with given capital, first dose, this much is produced. 10 units is produced. Initially, this may increase. Second unit, third unit, fourth unit. But beyond a certain level, ultimately, there will be a level where any further addition of the factors of production will not increase output. The addition to the output will grow by falling rate of production. The marginal contribution of output to the total output will continue to be smaller and smaller and smaller. In a very simple way, any production activity with given technology at a point of time is always subject to diminishing marginal returns. You cannot expect marginal returns to grow continuously. Initially, there will be some increasing returns. But eventually, beyond a point, the marginal returns will continuously fall. This particular law, again, is another fundamental law of economic analysis. This fundamental law applies to all production activities. This production law, we can understand in a better perspective when we think about agriculture. In agriculture, you can think about extensive agriculture or intensive agriculture. In both ways, there is bound to be the operation of this diminishing marginal returns sooner or later. But in a very simple fashion, let us say this. If I use for a given piece of land, one dose of capital and labor, my production will be, say, 10 quintals. Two doses, 15 quintals. Three doses, 13 quintals. Marginal addition gradually goes down. And it ultimately starts falling, and beyond a certain stage, there will be no addition to the total output. So there is a limit to production activity. There is always a limit in a context of a given technology. And as a reason, we can never think of producing unlimited quantity of anything in an unlimited fashion, for the simple reason that our resources are limited and application of these resources in a production activity is invariably governed by the law of diminishing marginal returns. Then there is another thing that is known in economics as returns to scale. Scale means, with a given technology, what kind of combination of labor and capital you use. The scale is determined basically by the technical capacity of a equipment or machinery or a plant. If you double that, you are increasing the scale twice. If you treble that, it becomes three times increase in the capacity. Economic analysis shows that even in the field of scale change, initially at a certain given scale, you will be producing this much. With a larger scale, yes, there will be a fall in average cost of production. The minimum average cost of production in case of a larger production capacity unit will be smaller. Still larger, again further fall in marginal cost. But this cannot continue. Beyond that, there will be some diseconomies of scale and your marginal production goes on falling. So, even in the field of course, technically in economic analysis, we talk about constant returns to scale, increasing returns to scale, and finally, falling or diminishing returns to scale. But that again is a very important consideration. Next aspect is regarding relationship between wealth and welfare. Wealth is putting together all kinds of goods and services which satisfy human want. In a technical way, wealth is a composition of things which have scarcity, which have utility, which can be exchanged, which can be stored. Anything which can show these attributes, which has these attributes, is technically called as wealth. What is welfare? Welfare is satisfaction derived by the use of these goods and services by human society. And we should remember, satisfaction depends, number one, on the goods used, number two, on the manner in which that good is used, number three, the environment in which that is used, number four, the price at which it is purchased. So there are many factors which determine welfare. But welfare is the ultimate aim of human society in any kind of economic activity. Normally the relationship is very simple. Larger the wealth, greater the welfare. Further increase in the wealth, there will be further increase in welfare. But this necessarily doesn't hold. For the simple reason that wealth, when it is not equally distributed, may not lead to maximization of welfare. Suppose among 100 persons, a given quantity of wealth is concentrated 90% in 10% hands and 10% in 90% hands. That society will produce a welfare which will be much less than when that particular wealth is more evenly, more equitably distributed among all centiles, deciles of that particular population. So, let us keep in mind that greater wealth leads to greater welfare is a very general statement. Let me qualify this statement. The same amount of wealth, more equally distributed, will lead to greater wealth. That is more important. And that is why you must have come across a particular term, welfare state. Any government in a modern context always aims at maximization of welfare of the society. And for this maximization of the welfare of the society, more equal distribution of wealth, more equal distribution of services, more equal distribution even of political opportunities, economic opportunities, that becomes very important. Finally, rationality of human being. We all know that human being is a social animal. Human being believes in maximization of enjoyment, maximization of pleasure, and anybody who tries to maximize his satisfaction, his pleasure, should be considered as a normal human being. He is not an abnormal human being. This, in philosophical terms, is known as hedonism. Hedonism means an attempt by an individual or a group of people together to maximize satisfaction. This is, in a way, again a basic consideration. For a producer, for a consumer, for a distributor, for a government agency, everywhere, this maximization of happiness, pleasure, plays a very critical role in decision making. So all these are basic considerations in business economics, in economics. We now come to the final aspect of this presentation, that is regarding policy. Yes, friends, now we come to policy. And the first question regarding this is to answer the simple question. What do we mean by policy? What exactly is policy? Policy, according to a very important authority on that subject, who wrote a book on fiscal policy, Bent Hansen, policy is a plan of action, a plan of choice with predetermined objectives within a definite time period with a given set of resources. This is basically policy. And you should remember, as a very simple individual, a family member, a farmer, a worker, we practice policy making almost at every stage of living. Even as an individual, forget about business unit and all that. When I wake up in the morning, I look to the day, full day. What are the number of hours available to me? About maximum 10 hours. How much time I will require for my lunch and my breakfast? 1 hour. So actual effective time for work is 9 hours. Now what is my profile of work today? Then I start calculating, this work will require 3 hours, this work will require 2 hours, this will require 1 hour. So I can at the most complete this set of works in today's perspective. When I think like this, this process of thinking itself is planning and policy making. This is planning and policy making. And let us keep in mind that a person who plans properly makes his decisions in advance regarding what he wants to achieve, he is a good person in economic sense, because his hard work, his efforts will result into highest production. A person who doesn't plan, a person who doesn't have policy objectives, though he works very hard and honestly, his output at the end of the day will be much lesser than what somebody who plans and takes policy decisions produces. So, we should keep in mind that policy, for everybody, individual, group, family, businessman, and the nation. For everybody, policy is a very important consideration. We can classify policy as micro policy and macro policy. In this discussion, so long as micro policy is concerned, it can be related to an individual or a family. That is most important. For any active economic decision, effective economic decision, our unit should be in family and not the individual. Because all economic decisions, how much jowar I purchase, how much milk I purchase, how much cotton textiles I purchase, is based on my requirement, not as an individual, but as a family head. So family unit is a very important micro unit. But in case of government units, like Gram Panchayat, Taluka Panchayat, Jilla Parishad, state government, municipal corporation, municipality, and of course the central government. All these government agencies also continuously plan and take policy decisions. And that is why all those policy options, policy decisions, deliberations, which involve economic considerations, can be described as economic policy making. In a modern democratic society, economic policy, there can be broader policy framework also. A policy framework which involves political policy, economic policy, cultural policy, foreign policy, all these put together constitute the national policy. We are not concerned with national policy in this perspective. What we are concerned with is economic policy. And economic policy is one of the areas which is highly developed, most comprehensive, having all applications of technology and scientific analysis. In my opinion, in a given society, as I described it earlier, democratic open society, a society which believes in individual freedom, a society which believes in property ownership, a society which believes in competitive market mechanism, of course with a given set of government interferences, that is bound to be there in any society. But let us call this kind of a liberal society. In such a society, in such a democratic competitive market mechanism, there will be about five major areas of policy making. Number one, let us call the broad heading as economic policy. The first unit will be monetary policy. Second unit will be fiscal policy. The third unit will be trade policy. The fourth unit will be industrial policy. And the fifth unit will be labor policy. These are major components of economic policy in any society. Now here again, let me remind you all very emphatically that the ultimate objective of planning is to make most productive use of limited scarce resources. Number two, maximize utility or satisfaction of the people. Number three, make welfare the most important consideration. So, when we talk about monetary policy, what are the major elements? And I know that all those who read newspapers every day, they will come across some of the terms which I am now using. Monetary policy of a government is mainly handled, implemented, and decided by the central bank of the country. The central bank of the country in the respect of our own country is the Reserve Bank of India, plus the Finance Ministry of the Government of India. Finance Ministry and Reserve Bank of India, they take decisions regarding monetary policy. In fact, according to theory as well as practice in India, the major decisions regarding monetary policy are taken by the Reserve Bank itself, its Board of Governors. And this is communicated to the people through the mouth of the Governor himself. Now, what do you mean by monetary policy? Monetary policy is that policy which regulates rate of interest, which regulates money supply, which regulates operation of market in money papers, which regulates credit supply. So, any policy measure adopted by the Reserve Bank of India in India and any central bank in any other country, which regulates money supply and credit supply together, and effectively in that process it regulates banking also, the entire banking. Central banking, your commercial banking, cooperative banking, cooperative societies, the entire credit system of the economy is governed by Reserve Bank of India. The manner in which it is governed and the manner in which it sets objectives by particularly in terms of monetary policy, the most important instruments of monetary policy as we call them. Number one, rate of interest. A slight increase in rate of interest or a decrease in rate of interest makes a large change in the social supply of credit in the money. And any increase in credit supply will increase demand. Any decrease in credit supply will decrease demand. And when demand increases, prices go up. Appalling. When demand decreases, prices go down. So if our objective is to control inflation, we must increase the rate of interest, which will reduce credit supply, which will decrease demand and bring down prices. Of course, this appears to be very simple. It is simplistic presentation. But the basic theoretical nexus between rate of interest and price level, because price levels determines the welfare of the people. At a higher level of prices, my welfare gets reduced. At a lower level of prices, my welfare gets maximized, particularly with reference to the poor people. It is generally maintained that during inflationary conditions, poor people suffer the most. When they suffer, there is a loss in welfare. So, welfare maximization is not achieved. That is regarding monetary policy, number one, rate of interest. Number two is, you know, these are technical terms, determining margin requirements, determining reserve ratios. Cash reserve ratio is number one and liquidity reserve ratio is number two. These are all banking concepts. In simple, decisions regarding these reserves, etc., etc., they again lead to whether money supply is going to increase or money supply is going to decrease through credit expansion and credit contraction. Number three is regulating open market operations. Government of India borrows in the open market. When government wants to reduce money supply in the people's hand, government comes to the market with securities, government securities. This is priced rupees 100. You can buy this. I will take your money with me. When people buy government securities, money with the people gets reduced. And when people sell securities, money with the people increases. Government of India is supposed to, through Reserve Bank of course, supposed to sell and buy securities. Simple, when government sells securities, purchasing power in the hands of the people gets reduced. When government buys securities, purchasing power in the people's hands increases. And these two things again impact the price level. Rising price level leads to loss of welfare. A moderately changing falling price level will maximize welfare of the people, welfare of the poor people. Then there will be some other instruments of monetary policy like margin requirements. The Reserve Bank tells banks, if traders come to you to secure credit from you, money from you, to buy jowar, give them 70 rupees for 100 rupees worth of jowar as advance. Now this 30 rupees is margin. If you want to control prices of jowar in the market, your margin has to be larger, so that traders buy lesser, traders store lesser, hold less. In case of some other goods, the margin can be 20%. In some case of other goods, it can be 10%. You can use this concept of margin to control prices in the market in the interest of the broader part of the society. Now, we can move to fiscal policy. Fiscal policy is policy decisions taken by the finance ministry of the country. It has no relation directly with the Reserve Bank of India. And in more details, fiscal policy deals with changes in tax rates and changes in taxes, changes in expenditure pattern, and third, changes in public expenditure through public debt, that is public borrowing. Taxes, expenditure and borrowing. These are the three instruments which the government can use while it fixes its fiscal policy. Normally, if you want to curb inflation, higher prices, higher taxes, income tax, corporation tax, agricultural income tax, sales tax, VAT, SEN VAT and state VAT, and so many other things, octroi, etc. But broadly, the principle is like this. If you want to reduce inflation, increase taxation of certain essential commodities. Generally also you can increase taxation. If you want to people have greater access to consumption, reduce taxation. So change in tax burden, increase or decrease, will lead to a certain objective. Similarly, when government spends more on welfare projects, spends more on infrastructure, spends more on education, spends more on health services, the total demand in the society goes up and it can influence the general price level of the country. If the objective is to reduce this pressure on price line, then the government will have to reduce its expenditure, and particularly expenditure of an unproductive nature. Third, we come to public debt. This is the last aspect. Public debt, the government borrowing. When tax revenue is not enough to cover public expenditure, the government will borrow from the people. When government borrows from the people, in a way it reduces purchasing power of the people. But when borrowed amount is spent on some public activity, it again comes back to the people as part of factor income. So, debt policy, borrowing policy, will be mostly decided by the fiscal capacity of the government. The government's fiscal capacity in the context of increasing expenditure, if it is less, it will have to borrow. This year itself it is maintained that there is going to be some relief in this regard, because government is getting substantially large amount of tax revenues, and so there is a possibility of some earlier public debt retired, repaired, and greater expenditure through tax revenue on certain public activities. I will conclude this presentation with a very important reference to what is known as relationship between choice and welfare maximization. Of course, for a businessman, welfare maximization is not a consideration. For a businessman, maximization of profit and profit only is the ultimate consideration. And the answer to this business policy simply depends on proper choice of technology, proper choice of product, and a proper approach to marketing. But then ultimately the entire economic activity of the society aims at maximization of welfare. So far as public finance is concerned, a former British expert, Professor Dalton, he maintained, when you spend on a particular activity, the marginal utility that you derive should be equal to marginal disutility of what you spend on it. When this happens, then of course there will be maximization of satisfaction, and maximization of satisfaction leads to maximization of welfare. But then the current thinking in this respect is in terms of public policy. The current thinking in this respect is determined by a very simple law, which is known as Samuelson-Bergson compensation principle. When government decides to do something, there are some beneficiaries and there are some losers. It is the best policy of the government to ensure that those who suffer get some compensation from the benefits received by those who get something more. So there is an inbuilt kind of a system which government machinery can use to maximize social welfare through public policy making. Let me conclude finally with one simple statement. All basic economic principles, theories, laws can be converted into applications in business economics to plan decisions regarding what to produce, how to produce, for whom to produce, and how much to produce, and finally how to price. Thank you very much.